Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 120. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined once again by Alex Cazora, who has been sitting in for David Todd during most of the offseason, as we kind of expected would happen. Alex, happy Friday for you, to you, and maybe not so much for several Steelers fans right now.
Well, that's myself included, yeah. The news of Sean Schweezum, apparent setback. I think Kevin Colbert said, I know you had the post up right around, I think, 10 o'clock this morning. And unfortunately, if you're just hearing the news, it sounds like this could be the end of Sushi's career.
Absolutely. The Steelers were forced to part ways with a failed physical designation with Sean Swisham on Friday. As Alex alluded to, it seems like he had some sort of setback, according to a release by Kevin Colbert on their team's official website. He won't allow him to compete in a timely manner. Sean Swisham has since released a statement of his own that's also, making the rounds right now. I know Bob Labriola posted it on Twitter. I've got a copy of it as well. He says that, unfortunately, the injury that he sustained in the Pro Football Hall of Fame game last preseason was catastrophic and has proven to be critical to continuing his career. While Swisham goes on and thanks several people in this, he does not specifically mention that he's going to retire, but I think it's kind of obvious right now that's the way this thing is trending. And look, I mean, we all know, you know, every player in the NFL is just one play away from really having his career end, and kickers included. And it's unfortunate that Swisham's career looks like it's going to come to an end on a meaningless play in a meaningless game on a meaningless field, really, that several over the years have spoke out against saying that it's not suitable to play on. I'm talking about Tom Benson Field or Stadium in Canton, Ohio. All the way around, there's nothing great about this story at all.
No, that's a great way to sum it up. Unfortunately, so, but that's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah, and right after all the injuries happened, you know, in the Hall of Fame game, players were immediately vocal about how terrible those field conditions were. Swisham just, you know, trying to give effort, trying to be a team player, running down a kick the way that, you know, we've been accustomed to him doing. So it's unfortunate it's unfortunate across the board, but especially in that context. And even though we kind of knew that, you know, Swisham was going to have an uphill battle trying to get ready for training camp, his contract, the player Chris Boswell, you just want a guy to be able to compete and show what he can do. And even if it doesn't work out in Pittsburgh, he would have a chance either by trade or release to go somewhere else. And obviously now that possibility looks very slim. So you have to feel for the guy.
I think there's, you know, all you and I and several that read the site and Steelers fans everywhere imagined that Swisham would at least be ready to compete during training camp. I think it was the writing has been on the wall for some time now that it was probably Chris Boswell's job to lose after the great season that he had last year after being signed right prior to the week 5 game against the San Diego Chargers. Of course, you know, Swisham's for a kicker, I guess, kind of high cap charge and high salary, forthcoming in 2016 was going to play a tiny, tiny role in it, but obviously you're going to go with the best kicker available. I think more than anything, people just looked at it as, hey, he's going to, you know, Swisher will come in there, at least be able to prove that he can kick again, he can be reliable, and who knows, the Steelers possibly can trade him for a late, you know, 6th, 7th round draft pick right before the start of the 2016 season. That way, everybody kind of wins in the situation. Well, you know, that's gone for naught now, and now it's obviously, you know, Chris Boswell's job to lose more than ever, and it'll be interesting now, I think. Well, let's talk a little bit about the financials mm-hmm. associated with this and get this out of the way first. The Steelers will save the $2.4 million in salary cap space in 2016 prior to roster displacement in the top 51. You can kind of look at this as really Chris Boswell is the guy that's displacing Swisher, so you know, probably just under $2 million in salary cap space there. Now, however, and this was going to happen if you cut Swisher later on in the season, or if you traded him at some point, the Steelers will incur a dead money hit of $2.206 million in 2017. So that's something that we kind of knew was coming anyway. All of this kind of just, you know, fast forwarded, you know, sooner mm-hmm. in the offseason than what a lot of us imagined here. I guess now the next question, and we'll talk about the guy that the Steelers signed to replace Swisher on the roster, who's not a kicker at all. Will the Steelers, or should the Steelers, sign a kicker, you know, to have during training camp and the preseason to kind of, you know, push Boswell, so to speak, and kind of, you know, provide them with some sort of buffer you know, that they really didn't have last year.
Yeah, you know, someone just asked me that on Twitter, Dave, and my initial thought is, well, if they wanted to do that and that was the plan, they wouldn't assign Brandon Johnson a running back. They would have just done a corresponding move with a fellow kicker. So, I mean, you know, it's very obvious to say, but it looks like the Steelers are just going to roll with Chris Boswell in training camp. And I think, what, 2 years, or was it last year even, the Steelers only had Schwiesem until he got hurt? Is that am I correct on that?
Oh, was Lord, I know they have had some during the off season, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had Ty Long during this past off season.
I think
going into camp last year, Schwiesem was the only kicker on the roster, I think.
You mean during the preseason?
Yeah, during training camp, yeah.
Well, let's put it to you this way. Last in 2014, during the preseason, Swisher was the only one to kick during the games, if my records are correct here. And that's 2014.
I think it was the same for last year.
2015. Well, I mean, Swisher got injured in the Hall of Fame game, so that's only one.
Yeah,
game.
But I mean, coming in to training camp, the expectation was just him. It was because they had to go out and sign Garrett Hartley right after. Right,
right. Because in that Hall of Fame game, they didn't kick. You know, they didn't have a kicker to come in. And so yeah, basically yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and also the added benefit is this year there's only four games, only 14 practices. There's a couple other walkthroughs involved as well, but probably not kicking in those. So there's a little less wear and tear on Boswell. He's now got a year in the system. His body's kind of gotten used to the rigors of it, and he knows how to take care of his body. It's not like you're kicking that much in training camp anyway. You have a couple periods, you know, of special teams throughout camp where you're going to do a couple, you know, kicks. I'm sure there's some stuff done in the morning and things that we don't see, but my guess is no, they're gonna try to keep that roster spot open for another position.
Now, looking back here at some quick reference, 2013 preseason, looks like Swisher was the only one to kick attempts there as well, too. Let's go back to 2012.
Swazi Waters? Swazi Waters, is that the last preseason leg?
No, 2012, Danny Ratman, right?
Ah, yeah, he bounced around. Gotcha.
Danny Ratman kicked. Let's see, he had six attempts. Now, of course, I didn't look at, I didn't look at extra points here. So there may have been some extra points. Let's see, in 2013 here, Swazi Waters had any. Well, in 2013, Ratman did evidently have an extra point attempt. So scratch what I said earlier when it comes to him. Let's see, 2014. Not all this is meaningless, but it's just fun to look back and think about who was kicking when and where. And look, I mean, Swisham came in, you know, midway through the 2010 season when Jeff Reed hit his dry spot there, yeah. As well. You don't think Jeff Reed's going to be active on Twitter the next few days? begging for the Steelers to bring him into camp to compete, right?
We'll see. Nothing ever surprises me with Jeff Reed. And just real quick here to talk about the guy that they did sign in this move with Swisham, Brandon Johnson from Penn State. He was in for tryouts as a tryout player, of course, UDFA. You know, Penn State barely played him at all on offense. I think he might have 5 career carries up at Penn State. But he had a great workout. He's 6'2", 228, and at his pro day in March, he ran a 4.43, jumped 39.5 inches, 10.7 in the broad. So a big guy that shows some great baseline athleticism. Now the running back spot is very crowded, of course. They've signed a couple backs throughout the offseason. Johnson is the replacement, and you know, maybe he gets a little bit of work at fullback or a short yardage guy. I don't know, but he's interesting from a measurable standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, outside looking in, and you know, going to be extremely tough for him to even to nab a practice squad spot at this point. But you know, stranger things have happened. You know, around the league. I want to add one final thought about whether or not you know the Steelers should pick up a kicker here. Look, I don't know exactly what the number is around the league, but I'd venture to say that at least 25 teams around the league currently have 2 kickers on their roster. So, knowing that and knowing comments that you know Kevin Colbert has made in the past about how they send scouts around to every preseason game and that kind of stuff, you can bet that they're going to have a short list of kickers who might not make other squads. God forbid something should happen with Boswell, either health-wise or performance-wise, between now and the start of the regular season. So the question becomes is, I guess, really the question really is, you know, how much wear and tear do you want on Boswell?
Yeah.
You know, between now and the start of the regular season. For starters, here's as soon as he kicks off during a preseason game, he should just run straight to the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. Don't even want him thinking about running anything down. We'll play with the actual 10 guys. That's fine.
And you have to know with Swisham, though, I mean, he made a career out of running down the field trying to get in on some tackles, you know. So, you know, unfortunately, that ended up costing him what looks like his career. But, sad day. I mean, Swisham was a great guy, great ambassador for the Steelers, did a lot of work in the city of Pittsburgh as well, too. But, you know, life goes on, and now it's Boswell's job.
Yep.
Let's see, where should we move on from here?
Have our next position group that we're looking at. I don't know if you want to get into that now or save it for a little bit later, but we're going to talk about the outside linebackers today, a group that of course has to improve and you know, I think has to be better than where they were last year. I don't know if you want to go to that or do you want to...
Let's go ahead and tackle that, because a couple of the other things that we have to talk about are really, you know, kind of peripheral type news items to talk about. So let's start talking a little bit about the outside linebacker position. Obviously, that group's going to be led by leader standpoint by James Harrison. And I think with Harrison, people already know what you have in him. 38 years old, a guy that played, just over 50% of the snaps last year, led the position group in snaps played. But a guy, I think, by his own admission, maybe – you know, saying that he won't be the guy to start this year, that Jarvis Jones maybe will be the guy that starts. We'll see how that goes, you know, once the season starts. But a guy that most definitely still can play the run well, not as productive of a pass rusher as he obviously was in previous years. Is he a guy that can still register 6 or 7 sacks in a season, Alex?
That might be pushing it. I mean, he had, what, 5.5 last year, and, I mean, a lot of that came from the Colts game where he got to kind of pin his ears back, and, you know, the Colts line was pretty bad, and the kind of perfect situation came. Metrically, he still tested well. If you look at some of the places like Pro Football Focus, they still rated him very highly in terms of even as a pass rush. You know, I think a 5-sack season is probably fair to say. He's probably going to miss a game or two. Just as a 37-year-old, that's usually what guys that are able to stick around happen sometimes. You get a little bit of wear and tear, and you got to take a game off to kind of get your body right. But, yeah, I mean, right now he's your most trusted pass rusher in terms of the outside linebackers. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that a 37-year-old is leading that group, but that's the case.
38, right?
Or 30, am I, is it 38 now?
don't short him.
He's a young 38. Young
38. the thing, and it's obvious with him, and you hit on it, is I think it'd be foolish not to expect him to miss at least one game. And I think, wasn't the one that he missed last year the one right before the bye? Is that correct? Were they smart with him? Mm-hmm. Kind of planning ahead. Let's see. That would have been the game against the Browns, I think, because they played the Seahawks coming out of that. I'm trying to just double check here. Yeah, James Harrison was inactive for that game against the Browns prior to the bye. It's not a bad strategy, though, right, to do mm-hmm. something like that?
Yeah.
Whether he needs it or not.
Mm-hmm. They're going to manage his reps in the preseason training camp. I mean, he might he probably won't practice. Maybe the first week he'll just be out there in his usual sweats, and I doubt he plays really anything. Maybe someone in the third preseason game, but, you know, there's really no reason to give him snaps. So they want to get a look at young guys, and they need to try to really, you know, manage Harrison's snaps as much as possible before the regular season.
Oh, I misspoke. The Steelers' game before their Week 8 bye this year is the Patriots, so I doubt he's going.
Yeah.
You're not going to get as long as he's able to walk onto that field, Harrison will be playing in that game. You know what you could do, I guess, is depending on how things go, Week 11 against on the road against the Cleveland Browns, maybe that's the perfect opportunity to maybe sit Harrison down, even if he doesn't want to. You know, mm-hmm. to kind of keep him fresh. But you know, I think 7 sacks is possible, but I would think that's the ceiling for Harrison right now. Obviously, we would hope to see the total snaps stay around 50% this year with him. So not a surprise with him, kind of what we probably expect. Now we'll see what we'll get with him. Moving forward, Jarvis Jones. this is a guy the Steelers, not shockingly, refused or you know, declined to pick up his fifth-year option this offseason, a guy that now has the carrot dangling over his head more than ever with a lot to prove this year, a guy that even so, you know, five, six sacks, the ceiling for him, I think I'd be willing to attempt to do a backflip, Alex, if he hit 6 sacks in 2016.
Yeah, and just like you doing backflips, they all might be a dream, 6 sacks and backflips. I think he's pretty maxed out, Dave, and that's certainly not me saying anything that's going to shock anybody. And I don't think Jarvis is a bad player. Let me make that clear. He's certainly not even close to the billing of a first-round pick, and he's never going to be even, I think, that 6 sack guy. But I think he is somebody that's gotten a lot stronger, that plays the run well, that does give a lot of effort, that does have active hand use and a much improved punch, that can drop into coverage, and a guy that has good pursuit. So there's a lot of those effort things, there's a lot of those, you know, weight room kind of things that you appreciate. But at the same time, knowing that he kind of has all those skills and still has yet to be able to really make his mark as a pass rusher, you know, again, kind of makes me want to say that he's really kind of a maxed out guy. And there's a lot of varying factors, and I could talk about this forever, and it probably isn't even worth it, but we know that he drops in the coverage nearly 30% of the time, more than anybody else by a long shot. We know that I was watching some tape, and, you know, schematically, it seems like he's used more on some of those and he happens to be out there for some of those fire zones where he's occupying a gap, shooting down the C gap to take the tackle's eyes away, or, you know, trying to free up a defensive back coming off the edge, things like that. Now, again, I think part of that is because he struggles as a pass rusher, so you do different things. You know, there's kind of a whole chicken and egg thing. Again, you could go back and forth on this forever. But the bottom line is what I would like to see happen is, you know, and I wrote this like a week or two ago, is that he becomes the new Arthur Motes, where he's a versatile backup who shouldn't be, you know, asked to be the guy and shouldn't be playing starter snaps, but is a guy that is not a liability out there either, at least against the run.
And he's not going to play, barring injury, he's not going to play 60% of the snaps this year.
No, what was the split last year? I think like 55-45, Harrison leading that, something like that.
Something like that. And when you also consider, look, I mean, the AFC North has got some up until recently, they've, you know, because one got released talking about Eugene Monroe, the Ravens released him. So now a rookie will be starting, presumably a rookie is going to be starting on the left side over there for the Ravens. But you still got four other games against guys like Andre Whitworth, Joe Thomas, of course, the Steelers in the final two two games of the 2016 season against, or actually three for that matter, Bengals, Ravens, and Browns is how they end the season. So the Steelers season will probably be well decided, hopefully, by the time you get to those three games. But regardless, he's going to be going against some great, or whoever's on the Steelers' right side, at right outside linebacker, going to be going against some great left tackles. I mean, you open up with the Redskins, and then you had the Bengals, the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Patriots. I mean, and then, heck, we haven't even gotten to Week 10 against the Cowboys. They get Joe Thomas again in Week 11 there. So when you're talking about the right side of the right outside linebacker position for the Steelers combined, can they get 10 combined sacks out of that position this year?
Well, you're basically just asking, will Harrison and Jarvis combine for 10 sacks? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, we could potentially see a Chickalo get some snaps maybe on that side. Maybe Motes get some, you know, a handful of 10 snaps on that side during a rotation or something. But yeah, in general, yeah. I mean, can Jarvis and Harrison combine for 10 sacks? And if so, is that acceptable?
It might be acceptable, but I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you know, I said I think Harrison comes in probably around 5, and I think Jarvis maybe hits 3, 3.5. So if I could get 8.5 sacks, I think that's maybe more realistic. I think 10's a nice goal to have, and of course you always want to, you know, shoot high for your goals. So I'd be pretty happy about that, but I'm not really expecting that either.
Yeah, once again in the backflip category, this would be if you got 10 combined, regardless of how that split happens. Look, James Harrison very well could get 4 at an end of a game, you know, like he did last year. So. Maybe it's a better to look. You know, I've talked about this before. Boy, my OCD is going crazy. My ADD is going crazy today. Go run off on some tangents here. sacks should be graded, right?
Yeah. I think you mentioned you were going to try to do something like that. Maybe I did. I don't even remember. But
yeah. Well, I think what I was going to do is I was going to do it and delegate it to you.
Yeah. But no, I understand that, because some are scheme related, some are freebie sacks where there's a bone protection. Like I did the look at Arthur Motes this past year, this past season, and I think 3 of his 4 sacks were pretty either luck or scheme related. So there's definitely an asterisk next to that.
Yeah, it'd be fun to go through the entire NFL and grade each one, because I think we all agree all sacks are not created equal, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If you gave them 1 through 4 or 1 through 3, even kind of grade on that thing, I mean, I think if you go back and look at what did I write that the Steelers outside linebackers combined for last year? Was it 15 total sacks from the outside linebacker position? I guarantee if you go through back all through 15, you're not going to find many high quality whoop your ass kind of sacks, right?
Not a ton. Nope. Dupree had a couple of easier ones. Moats, like I said. Jarvis was a little bit of effort and luck created. Harrison had a couple legit ones. Yeah, I mean, it's probably six, seven, like, legit sacks on the outside linebackers, probably.
Now, you need those, and it's not the player's fault right. that, you know, that stuff happens. But, once again, they're not Von Miller taking that Patriots right tackle to school kind of situations there. All right, we've talked about Harrison.
Yeah, just one last quick note on Jarvis, and I pointed this out when I kind of did my I did an article, I think, 2 weeks ago or last week, that the last 5 minutes of the game, James Harrison played about 72% of the time. Jarvis Jones just 29%. That kind of, in a nutshell, tells you about the trust that they have in Harrison and the lack of trust in Jarvis to be a closer and be a guy that can get after the quarterback.
Wow. Yep. Most definitely. And like we said, you know, assuming Harrison stays healthy, we expect a 50-50% snap ratio probably between those two players. And as you said, you know, obviously you don't want Harrison, you know, anything more than a zone flat drop for Harrison. Yeah.
But he drops a lot. They drop the right outside linebacker more than the left. And so sometimes I kind of wonder if they would ever flip Harrison to the left side. I'm sure that won't happen, but the left side drops a whole heck of a lot the last time. I mean, Harrison dropped, I want to say, like 22% of the time last year.
Yeah, and once again, we've seen in the past, you go back a couple years to that game against Tennessee, you don't want him running with tight ends over the middle. That's not happening there. Okay, moving on with Arthur Motes. I love Arthur Motes, the person. I love Arthur Motes' effort on the field. I love a lot of things about Arthur Motes, but, you know, he's just a guy, right?
Yeah, you know, I always point back to this. In 2014, whenever James Harrison got healthy at the end of the season, was for the final 2 weeks of the 2014 season. So you had Harrison, you had Jason Worlds. Motes didn't play. I mean, he literally saw, I think, five defensive snaps, and he's played on special teams. So in a perfect world, you know, Motes wouldn't have to play a lot. But obviously the Steelers outside linebacker spot right now is far from perfect.
Going back to last year and talking about Motes, you know, he got a couple gimmies, I think. One. How many did he have in that Colts game? You remember, one or two?
Motes. He had one, but it was an earned sack. He ran through the right tackle. I think it was Denzel Good, the rookie, but he bull rushed him good.
He had four total last year. If memory serves me, two were half sacks officially. Mm-hmm. One of those came, I believe, one of the full sacks came against the Colts, if I'm correct, and one came in the Week 17 game against the Cleveland Browns, if memory serves me.
Yep.
As far as total quarterback hits go, last year I think he had, or hurries as they like to call them, and these are unofficial, he had 10 of those. He had two passes defensed. He did have two fumble recoveries, if memory serves me. I wrote and got blistered about this earlier in the offseason. Is there a legitimate chance that 2016 is Motes' final season, despite him being signed to a longer contract?
Sure. I mean, I think it definitely could be, depending on the progression of guys like, you know, Chicolo and Feeney. But I don't want to write it off either, because you know Harrison is, even though he's keeping that door open, it's very likely this is his last year. Jarvis Jones could be gone, and if you lose both of those guys, one by retirement, one by choice, you probably don't want to cut a third one, and then you're really reshuffling the deck for 2017. So there's some comfort in having a veteran and having a guy that's been around the system, a guy that can play different spots, can play on special teams. So I think it's more likely that he sticks around, knowing that James Harrison is likely gone, and especially if Jarvis goes. So I honestly think the decision on Jarvis Jones could definitely impact Motes' career and his future in Pittsburgh. If he walks, if his team lets him go, Motes is, I think, almost certain to stay. But if Jones is re-signed, that could put, I think, Motes in jeopardy, again, depending on how and if Chicolo and Feeney and Bud progress.
Yeah, and Alex, as I've said in the past, with Jarvis, and especially after they failed to pick up his fifth year option, I will be absolutely shocked if he's back in Pittsburgh, you know, past this season. But Motes, you know, it's just that he's just not. I mean, he is a reserve player. He is a guy that you kind of go to get 30% snaps, right?
Ideally, yeah. I think ideally he's a guy that can kind of just, you know, buzz around, be a left outside guy, be a right outside guy when injury strike or, you know, whatever the case is. I think that's the ideal situation. I think he's being forced to play more than what the team is comfortable with, or maybe at least what I'm comfortable with. But knowing, obviously, last year with Bud Dupree being a rookie, he couldn't play all the time. And the thing people have to understand is, you know, I know that he was not an all-pro kind of player, but Jason Worlds did not come off the field. His last year in Pittsburgh, he played 98.5% of the time. You had to fill a lot of snaps with that. So, you know, you have to try to figure out a way to divvy up the snap count now, and you usually don't have to do that in Pittsburgh. Usually they're outside linebackers, you know, historically, they don't come off the field. And even Worlds, again, did not come off the field. So it was a little bit of a new experience, I think, for Pittsburgh, and they're trying to navigate it the best they can.
Yeah, unless you have a dominant guy like a Justin Houston or or a Von Miller or James Harrison back in his prime, you know, I think you're going to continue to see that. Now the question is how much progression can a guy like Bud Dupree have this year? Now, Bud Dupree has come out recently this offseason and said he hit the rookie wall last year. That's not surprising when you talk about conditioning, everything that goes along with that. He just had an interview with Sirius Satellite Radio on Thursday talking about how amazed he really was at James Harrison and how much money James Harrison invests yearly in his body, and that he's always making it a point to make his body, you know, number one priority, as any player should, because it's your, if you can't get on the field, you're not going to make money, you know, in so many words. So I think it's important with Dupree to take what he's learned from last year, which, yes, he did have, what, 4 sacks last year, but I think all 4 of them came early.
Yep.
I think there was a lot of gimmies in there. During the second half of the season, it was like, and once Bud even started getting the nod in the starting lineup, there were times where Bud Dupree would just disappear. Not only against the as a pass rusher, but against the run as well too. So, we're talking about a guy that came out of Kentucky, and quite honestly, while he's an athletic specimen, he never really dominated while at Kentucky. So the question is, can a player that never really dominated, you know, at Kentucky? Now, yes, I understand he never really had the great coaching, you know, specifically outside linebacker. You know, they switched from 4-3 to 3-4 while he was there at Kentucky. The question is can a guy like Bud Dupree become a double-digit sack guy?
Well, that's what they drafted him for, so you hope so. Yeah, I mean, I understand a lot of times, you know, if you don't have the production in college, you won't have it in the NFL, but we know a lot of different factors with Dupree. Like you said, the coaching staff, he dropped into coverage 50% of the time, so you just weren't going to get the sacks when you're dropping at that high rate. You know, Dave, I went through Dupree's tape for my One Step to Take series for Steelers Depot, and I came away more impressed than what I thought I would be. I just thought he's a smart guy. I thought he picked things up quickly. He was almost always lined up in the right spot. He dealt with motions well. Even whenever he got in the wrong spot, you know, someone would quickly point that out to him. He would quickly get himself back into the right spot, you know. It's hard to go through the exact details of it now, but, you know, I thought he played the run well. I thought his, you know, gap integrity was strong. Again, I did not think he was a guy that was out of position often. At least from my 30,000-foot view, I did not think he was a guy that was a liability. You got to see a better pass rush. You got to, you know, people talk about, you know, Dupree needs counters. You know, out of Kentucky, he's got to develop some counters. He does, but he still needs to develop a go-to move. I still don't know what his really go-to move is outside of just, you know, having that burst to kind of beat you off the line. But that doesn't happen as often in the NFL as it might have, you know, happened in Kentucky. So that's what I want to see, is him find a go-to move to really perfect, and then you can have some counters to work off of that. So as a pass rusher, there's a lot of steps. But in terms of just not being overwhelmed by the situation and playing in position and growing, I thought he did well.
And, you know, we've seen even Harrison to this day. I mean, he's still got his two main moves.
Yeah.
He's got that bull rush, and he's got that kind of up and under.
From
a rip move from the outside that he, you know, that he's made a living
off
of.
That's it. There's not going to see a James Harrison spin move or anything. You got two moves, and that's all you need.
Right. Now he'll set things up different, you know, on certain occasions. And that's one thing where Bud Dupree is going to have to learn as well, too. Here's the thing about Harrison, though, is for a guy, the guy's always had some bend, and he's always had great ankle flexibility. That's something Jarvis does not have.
Right.
And it's something that really we've seen sometimes with Bud Dupree. So can a full off season of really dedicating himself to his craft and all in training, can Bud Dupree become a better kind of bendy edge kind of guy? But yeah, you're right. He's a jack of a lot of moves and master of none of them right now.
Right.
With Bud Dupree, and until he proves that he can consistently, you know, beat a tackle with speed on the outside, which in today's NFL is hard to do regardless, unless he can beat him with power, with a bull or with a rip move. It's just going to be constantly, you're just hoping for the best kind of thing and hoping the quarterback holds on to the ball so you can get one of those 4.5 second sacks.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a super bendy guy, I don't think, ever, but he's got to be better. You got to be able to corner and kind of steer yourself with a good angle. Even Von Miller, I mean, he's a great example. Yeah, he's got a great first step. He'll whoop you off the edge, but usually when he does, he's able to finish those plays by being able to have that flexibility, the hip and ankle flexibility, and steer his shoulders and get upfield. Dupree got run up the arc way too much last year, and that takes you out as a pass rusher. You lose rush lane integrity. You create scramble lanes for the quarterback. There's a lot, I think, there's work to do for Dupree in that regard as well. His rush lane integrity and not getting out of his gap as often, I think that's something he has to work on as well. But yeah, you got to have a little bit of bend. The guy fights hard. The guy works hard. He tries different moves. He tries to set things up. It doesn't always work, but you know he tries to. He's thinking out there. You got to have that move that scares you as an offensive tackle. The one you're like, oh man. If he uses this, I'm going to be in trouble, you know. And if you do that and get in the tackle's head and make him think, then you're playing faster and you're going to win a lot more often.
And we saw Jarvis go fight through this with being run up the arc, especially in his first 2 years. He's gotten better at it.
Well, he just stopped trying to speed rush. He just started to bull rush and said, forget about it.
And you know, that's one area where if he's going to be better, talking about Jarvis this year, it's going to be because of a bull rush, right?
You're talking about Jarvis?
Jarvis, right.
Yeah. His bulls, he's got some strength. His punch has gotten a whole lot better. I remember, 2 years ago in training camp, you know, his punch, he would knock Kelvin Beachum off his base a couple of times. He dominated Beachum in the one practice, and that was the first time I kind of went and saw, wow, you know, his punch got a whole lot better. He's got some strength. If Jarvis is going to win, it's going to be that speed bull that Harrison's kind of perfected as well. And that also helps you stay in your lane, too. And he's got to stay on his – not to go back to Jarvis for too long here, but Jarvis just has to stay on his feet. He's been on the ground too often as a pass rusher, as a run defender. He's the guy that's going to make his living on effort play, staying in the play, competing, working hard, finishing. He works hard, but you got to stay on your feet to be able to marry that effort. And that's the big thing for Jarvis. You look at some of the sacks Jones had last year, this one against Cleveland sticks out. He's able to stay on his feet and finish one of these plays. You got to stay on your feet to compete. That's true of anyone across the board in football.
We fully expect the Steelers to keep at least 5 outside linebackers. You would agree?
Yeah, there's no way that you draft Feeney, you have Chicolo, and you only roll with 4.
So the question is, and you know, I think it barring something really drastically changing, you would think Chicolo odds on favorite to be at least 5 in this group. And the thing about Chicolo is, man, I keep going back to the East-West Shrine Game.
Mm-hmm.
During his senior year, and how really dominant he was, you know, with his hand in the dirt. The thing is, we haven't seen, and although, you know, it's hard to judge on the limited amount of snaps that he's had, we have to see, I think this year during training camp and the preseason, Anthony Ciccolo proved that he can become a similar type pass rusher as he was with his hand in the dirt, as he is now with his hand out of the dirt.
Yeah. You know, Ciccolo's...
I mean, he's lighter now than he was at University of Miami. He should be, you know, more athletic. He's got a, you know, he's got a year underneath his belt now to know what's going on fully. The question is so, look, some players just are better with their hand in the dirt than standing up. That's why you cannot convert every undersized defensive end to a 3-4 outside linebacker.
Right. No, I think Ciccolo's made a very smooth transition, though. I think it exceeded my expectations, and if I had to guess, I would Porter would never tell you, but I think he would probably exceed his expectations, and maybe even Ciccolo's as well. He's down to about 254. The guy moves. He's a very easy mover. He's a smart guy. And he had a nice camp and a decent preseason last year. So I think there's some intrigue there, but I'm not really expecting him to contribute on defense, and that's not my thought. My thought is on special teams. You got to replace all these guys we've lost, the guys I talk about almost nearly every podcast now. That's the focal point right now.
You know, it's hard to say what side Ciccolo's better on. Is it the left or right? Mm-hmm. I think we've seen probably an equal amount of snaps on both sides between preseason and regular season. So, he's the type guy now that you just when you get into this upcoming preseason, you really want to say, man, that's a guy that's impressive against the furniture movers.
Yeah, and he'll get the opportunity. I'm sure he's going to play as much as anybody on defense in the preseason for Pittsburgh. So this will be a nice showcase opportunity to see what steps he's taken and how big they are going from year one to year two.
Travis Feeney, a late round draft pick by the Steelers out of Washington this year. Look, I understand every year people get excited about players, you know, these outside linebacker types, specifically converted kind of defensive ends, if you will. The fact that Feeney missed a lot of time, to my understanding, during the offseason program, is not good. You know, he really is going to have to be an extreme contributor on, regardless of what you see against the furniture movers during the preseason. He's really going to have to be a special teams ace to make this final 53-man roster. Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest with you, I don't see it right now.
Well, definitely missing the time that he's missed. In the spring is gonna what's the reference Tomlin makes about getting on the train, falling behind on the train?
Yeah, you can't get behind, you know, can't expect to catch on the train, you know, after it's left the station. And he really, to my understanding, missed a lot of time. And people can say what they will. I mean, look, the guy is incredibly smart. But, you know, judging him off of interviews and, mm-hmm. and how his football X's and O's and knowledge of the game is. But the fact of the matter is, this is a guy that struggled to stay healthy at Washington while he's there, had, you know, several shoulder issues, mm-hmm. A sports hernia surgery this offseason. Not a great start for a guy, and a guy that really at this point you hope just can get on the field and show that he belongs on the practice squad at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say he has no chance to make the 53 because he's an aggressive.
I'll say it.
Really? I mean, we know that he is an intense, aggressive special teams guy. I think he'll make some impact plays. I think Danny Smith will like the energy that he plays with, similar to Roosevelt Nix, although, of course, they're very different body types and positions and yada yada. But you know what I mean, in an effort standpoint. I still think what I said whenever he was drafted, that he's going to eventually move to inside linebacker if he sticks around in Pittsburgh, because I don't think he is enough of an actual pass rusher to win off the edge. I don't think it's natural to him. I think he won with his athleticism, but I don't think he's really refined. I know they're going to teach him, but I think he's going to be a guy that probably is best fit in terms of defensive opportunity comes at inside linebacker.
See, I'm going to disagree with you. Okay. As far as a move goes with him, I think it's all or nothing with him because there's just not enough evidence with him off the ball, in my opinion, to make the move inside.
He played off the ball a lot of Washington. He didn't move to the, what do they call it, the buck until this past year. He was playing off the ball before that.
With Feeney, he was mostly an edge rusher, though.
This past year, but not the years before.
Yeah, I didn't see enough to be convinced that he could handle a move like that.
I mean, so I think it's a more natural thing. He only moved to the edge guy this year is because Kakaha was graduated and Washington went to the Saints, and they had to get an edge guy there. So, I mean, I think you know, he's got experience in both. I mean, maybe he can't do inside, I don't know, but I don't think it's enough of an actual pass rusher to exist as an outside linebacker.
Well, I mean, and that's going back. I just didn't see enough to feel comfortable with him being successful off the ball.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
There. I mean, he is an athletic specimen. So, you know, I've heard some people say, well, move him to safety. That's not going to happen.
And I'm worried
there.
About his frame on the outside because he's got a Gumby body. He's a long, leggy kid. And the, you know, he'll bulk up, but to play the edge like that, I don't think his frame is necessarily ideal.
You're right. I mean, I think it goes without saying he's going to need 10, 15 pounds. And I think even he said after that he even had, you know, dropped some weight since I think I wrote something up about him saying he was 220 or something that he's got to get some more weight on. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, look, if he stays at that weight, he's mm-hmm. absolutely got no shot to play outside. Mm-hmm. And then you have to see what he has inside. So it will be interesting. But, I mean, judging by all reports, he has worked when he has worked during the offseason at outside with Joey Porter. Of course, mm-hmm. Joey Porter was the one that talked about him after the draft. Me personally, I don't see it. Yeah, if you have to worry about a guy like that moving it inside and wondering if that can happen, you really have to worry about their long-term future right now. I understand where you're coming from athletically, you know, and everything else. I just am not seeing. I think it's boom or bust for him as an outside guy. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. Another guy, and this is a guy that I'm interested to see or to have you report on where he lines up during training camp is L.J. Fort. You know?
Yeah. Because we don't really know.
We have seen him actually get snaps in a preseason game as an outside linebacker.
Yeah, he got a sack against the Green Bay game. I think he had a sack.
Right, and on the flip side, I think he has some experience as an inside guy as well, too. So a good above-average special teams player, a guy that, because of that, ended up on the 53-man roster last year, right, at the end mm-hmm. of the season because of that, mm-hmm. because of injuries. But a guy really specifically – really, we shouldn't even be talking about what position is L.J. Fulton what a play, right? Because it all comes down to can he win a 52nd, 53rd spot as a special team guy.
Exactly. The almighty, you know, Danny Smith selection. So yeah, it doesn't even really matter. You know, I know it's easy to forget about his name lost in the shuffle of Chicolo and Feeney and Matakevich. You don't want to, you know, forget Fort Matthew Marks. He was talking about it the other day on Twitter about, you know, guy that has a year in the system, has been in the NFL before, you know, got a cup of coffee last year in Pittsburgh. I don't want to discount him totally, but I think athletically and draft pick wise, some of those things are working against him.
I think people who are too worried sometimes about thinking, well, okay, this guy will provide you nice third string depth at a position, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's why I am kind of interested still to see where he lines up. I guess more for it gives me something to write about when it comes to L.J. Fort. Well, okay, he's an outside linebacker, he's an inside linebacker, but the fact of the matter is, much like Ross Ventrone, does it matter if you put kicker beside his name, you know,
mm-hmm.
the guy's either going to make it as a headhunter on special teams or not. Now,
right.
I think people don't take into account the fact that some people, regardless of position, are going to make this roster for the sheer fact that they can cover punts and kicks.
Yep, you got to have a couple of those guys. People always take, you know, I'm a big special teams guy. Anyone who listens knows, you know, Chidi Awuma, Patrick Bailey, those are my guys. And if you don't have good coverage units, even in this era where you might get more touchbacks, you're going to lose football games. Every football game, Dave, starts with a special teams play, a kickoff. And you got to have guys who can go down there and cover.
Anybody else we should – I mean, Matakevich obviously is an inside guy. Mike Riley, who they signed late out of William & Mary, I guess an outside guy, right?
Because, yeah, I believe so, because McCord went down.
Right, and McCord is a guy that we talked a little bit, you know, about during the offseason after he was signed as an undrafted free agent. It looks like right now, at least for the extended – future, he's going to be on the Steelers injured reserve list. We don't know the significance of the injury. They did not come to a injury settlement with him within 5 days after he was waived and reverted back to the injury reserve list. So maybe he's a guy that we're sitting here talking about next offseason at the same time. However, it's rare for undrafted guys like that, you know, after missing a year to make an impact. So I guess I kind of sum this all up with, you know, we expect the Steelers to keep five outside linebackers this year, and we expect those five to be James Harrison, Jarvis Jones, Arthur Motes, Bud Dupree, and Anthony Ciccolo, and anything beyond that's because somebody stood out on special teams, correct?
Yeah, I still think Feeney has an opportunity. You know, I think that obviously that fifth spot's still open. I think Ciccolo has the inside track, but you want to create competition, especially for special teams, especially for young guys. You want to have that culture already instilled. So definitely that's one of the battles to watch for.
Now the question becomes with this group of let's say five, 15 sacks is not going, like it or not, 15 sacks is not going to cut it out of this group this year.
Nope.
I don't care where, you know, if you're getting an increase, you've got to get more sustained pressure and you've got to get more sacks out of this group of five in 2016. The question is, you know, putting a number on sacks is not fair. Give me pressures all day long, consistent quarterback pressure. Can this group improve over last year?
Well, you asked me a couple weeks ago, and I said they'll get Blackjack 21 sacks, so I guess I'll stick with that. I mean, Dupree should improve. You know, I think Harrison will still do his thing, and maybe Jarvis, you know, gets a little bit more, but I think the big onus is on Bud Dupree because you're not going to really expect Harrison or Jarvis or Motes to really exceed their sack totals. I think Dupree is the only guy you could really justifiably say that outside of just random chance and circumstance. So, Dupree, if he could touch double-digit sacks, that'd make me one happy guy.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the key there. And obviously, you're not going to pull a guy off the field that's consistently getting after the quarterback for a guy like Arthur Motes. Now, obviously, you're going to want to platoon those guys. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think a 60-30 split is perfect. Obviously, you would like to move towards, you know, to get higher than that. A guy like Ciccolo is going to be hard pressed to see the field regardless, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even totally think about Ciccolo in those terms. Just make the team. If an injury happens, if Harrison goes down or anyone goes down, he might get an opportunity. But that's not my thought right now.
I think the biggest thing, and it'd be fun for us to kind of chart that to our project this year, is pressures and sacks from the outside linebacker position as part of four-man rush.
Yep, that's the big key. I harp on it all the time. I bet you anything Keith Butler does as well, you got to be able to get a four-man rush. You know, doing those fire zones and bringing that pressure is great, but it does leave you more vulnerable against all these 11 personnel and the athletic guys, and now you only have, you know, six guys to cover a lot of space. That's a tough task. You're going to get burned occasionally. So if you can get that four-man rush, it makes everyone's job so much more easier.
Worried about this group?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Who's confident? Raise your hand and put it down because you're lying.
Right. I am, too. I'm worried about this group, and I'm with you. I think a lot of it has to do on Bud Dupree, because I think if you magically want to thank James Harrison, and like I said, I think we should all be doing – I think 10 – I wouldn't bet my house against Harrison and Jarvis Jones combining to hit 10, but if they do hit that, I will be shocked if it's much, much more than that. Mm-hmm. I think they've done their job if they get you 10. I just want to see a more consistent pass rush this year overall out of the outside linebacker position, and especially when as part of a four-man rush? Because
is Dupree the most like critical guy in this defense in that respect of the one guy that you need to step up? Does he lead that charge, you think?
I really think so. I mean, how can he not be, right? I mean, you know what you're getting out of Timmons. You know what you're getting out of Shazier. Right. You know what you're getting out of Harrison.
Well, I mean, across the whole defense. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I'm going across the whole defense here saying, look, I think it's the guy. There's a lot of things that we already know about guys that are already there. We know what Cameron Hayward is. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, I think you could probably put Stephon Tuitt a close second maybe to Bud Dupree, right?
Well, but, I was thinking more like, I don't know, Ross Cockrell or Robert Golden or someone that we know a little less about.
Yeah, but give me pressure anytime and I'll worry about what happens on the back end.
Very true. Good point.
You know, I've always been a fan that you could give me a lot of practice squad guys back there sometimes in the back end if I'm getting after that quarterback a lot, because the less time that those guys have to cover on the back end, the better, you know. But if you're allowing opposing quarterbacks, you know, three to 4 seconds consistently to look down the field, they're going to make plays. And I don't care. That's across the NFL. And I don't care really who, you know, unless you have a guy like Revis or Norman or something like that, that's going to happen. So that's just my thoughts on it. So, I think Dupree's going to play a huge, huge role in the success of this defense this year, and especially from a pressure standpoint, and specifically in a pressure standpoint as part of four-man rush. I mean, I don't want to see Keith Butler have to blitz and use five as much as he had to do last year, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there. What position shall we talk about next go around? Inside?
Yeah, that would be most logical. So inside linebackers next.
I guess we're kind of running short on time here, so we'll get a few of those peripheral things we plan on talking about in this show on Monday. We should have plenty of time to discuss that along with several other things. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. You can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeders Depot. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you don't like anything or you did like something that we talk about, normally people send emails when they want to kill me. But
also, real quick, to interrupt, but as like a PSA alert, please do not donate to last year's GoFundMe. I got one donation from Ron, which I really, really do appreciate, but wait until like July 1st when we put up this year's GoFundMe for training camp. You don't have to donate to last year's one. So if you see that link, just please ignore it.
Yeah, and we'll probably be making that available on July 1st, I hope, is when we'll kick off the drive for Alex there. If you'd like to make a donation otherwise to the site or to the show, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com, finding that donation button in the navigational bar up top. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.